Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I'm Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific. 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland. I'm your hostess for this evening. And as always, we are brought to you through the good offices of a great group of people who truly believe that each and every one of us embodies the things upon which this nation was founded. www.patriotfamilies.com. As I said, a great group of people who truly believe that we are the nation. Tonight's topic, ladies and gentlemen, is the right to an education. One of the problems we face in today's America is that a great many people seem to be confused about exactly what is a right and what is a good. A right means something that you are by the nature of having been born a human being, entitled to exercise, such as life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, to quote that famous document, the Declaration of Independence, the right to breathe, the right to be secure in your home, the right to worship as you please, the right to assemble, the right to petition the government for redress against of grievances. These are rights, innate qualities or actions of being human that our Constitution and our government, by extension, is supposed to protect for us. They don't give them to us. They come by the hand of God, if you wish, or by nature, if you wish that way. We are born with these actions, desires, and freedoms, if you will. The Constitution says absolutely nothing about a right to an education, because an education is not a right, ladies and gentlemen. It is a good. It is a concept, idea, or product that those of us who understand how to live in a world with other people recognize as of value. The more education you receive, the more likely you are to figure out ways to be successful in this world. My friend Rod in the chat room says a right is something that you own, not something someone else is forced to buy for you, and that's quite correct. A right is innate. It belongs to you by virtue of being born. Education is not a right. Education is a good. And as a good, it requires some cost or effort on the part of the person who would like to have it. Unfortunately, too many people, parents and students, assume that they have a, quote, right to an education, when what they actually have is the right to an opportunity. And not just an opportunity to be educated, but an opportunity to try one's wings and fly as high as one's talent, skill, and wing strength will take one. Education is a good, ladies and gentlemen. It is a valuable commodity, if you will, that can enhance one's life and promote one's personal and material and even spiritual success. But it is not a right. Along with the confusion over whether or not education is a right, is the confusion over what education actually is. I've talked with many students and quite a few parents who assume that an education is a piece of paper with grades on it, a diploma, a certificate, a trophy, something that, like the content label on a can of tuna fish, tells everybody exactly what you're made of, what you have inside, and what you can be used for. Well, that isn't correct either. Education is an ongoing activity that, if you are a viable, reasonably bright human being, continues as long as you are alive. It is not a one-time only, buy it, take it home, and if it doesn't work, you can turn it back in for a refund. Education is action. It's effort. It's listening and watching and observing and retaining information and skills that someone else offers to you because they have expertise in these areas. Looks like we have a caller coming in. Let's see who's on the line. Hello.
Hi, Terry. It's Linda. I'm on the freeway, so I'm just listening.
Oh, great. Well, feel free to chime in whenever you feel like it, dear, except by all means, keep your eyes on the road, okay?
Thank you. Okay.
Oh, that's our friend Linda Sills. She does her own show every Wednesday, right from the left coast, and she's a delightfully brave and committed patriot, folks, and always welcome on all of our shows and in all of our hearts. I want to remind those of you out there who equate education with a right to something that you do not have a right to a flat screen television, a computer, a car, a dual-sided super-duper produce ice water and chicken soup refrigerator from the door, a smooth lawn, a perfectly landscaped lot, a house, a bed. You don't have right to any of these things. You get these things through effort, which translates to purchasing them either with specie as in currency or by barter or by the effort you put forth. Yes, in the perfect world, which we aren't going to get, folks, in spite of the current administration's promises, everybody would come into the world hosed and shod, as they used to say in Regency England, meaning having property, having loving parents and plenty of nannies and servants to guard your every step and provide you with everything you need to take your place among the elite. It doesn't happen that way. But in this nation, because we have the right to an opportunity to become educated, you can achieve being hosed and shod, as it were, through your own efforts and the expertise of those who offer their skills and talents and knowledge to you. You are not required to belong to a certain family group, a religion, a specific member of a societal niche, as in a member of the peerage or a wealthy individual. Education, the right to learn from people who know more than you do, is available to every single child born in this country, and many who aren't born here and who flood over the borders because for some reason or another, everybody else's laws are worthy of being obeyed, but not ours. There's another factor in education, ladies and gentlemen, that apparently the president did not take advantage of. Anyway, that opportunity, ladies and gentlemen, to rise above whatever circumstances you were born in, that is the right we're talking about. Not the guarantee of an A or a college degree or a starting salary of X many thousand dollars because you have a piece of paper that says you spent 12 years and then four more years learning things from people who knew more about them than you did. Because it doesn't guarantee that you actually learned them. If you cannot retain the information given to you in school, it doesn't matter what great report cards you have. When your boss asks you to tell him how many boxes will fit into a closet that is 6 feet tall, 3 feet deep, and 4 feet wide, and you can't figure out the volume, then your education doesn't exist. You merely have a piece of paper that says you sat there for 12 years and maybe possibly figured out something or other while you were there, but probably not much. There's a confusion in the minds of many people in our country, ladies and gentlemen, over the difference between a right and a good. And this confusion has led to the creation of a professional victim, blame everybody else, dependent class of people of all sorts who believe that somehow or other government is intended to be their eternal parent, that they never have to compete against anyone for a desired goal, that they never have to rely on their own expertise or skill or lack thereof to get them to a desired goal, that they never have to put forth effort in order to have the many goods that our incredibly wealthy society offers. And this confusion between a right and a good is doing its best to bring this nation to its knees. It's being translated into the way we teach our children, and that means it is holding our future hostage. I believe that everyone has the right to the opportunity to learn. I believe this with all my heart. If I didn't, I wouldn't work in the field that I do. I wouldn't have been a private tutor for over 20 years. I wouldn't be doing this show. But I do not believe that you have a right to unearned success merely because you are physically present in a classroom for the required amount of time over a calendar year. And yet, many parents do believe that this is what their children have a right to when they say, my kid has a right to an education. There's a... Go ahead, Linda.
Oh, I was just going to say, what you were describing about the difference between rights and commodities, or the opportunity to go out and get your own commodities, is the difference between a free capitalist system and a central planned government or an authoritarian government. So
exactly.
That's where, and the sad news is, unless I'm mistaken, they wait till freshman year of college to give you Econ 101. Big mistake.
Yeah. Uh-huh, they do. And when we try to introduce the idea of value for value received below that level, inevitably we get met with stares and, huh? Because they're so used to, I want, therefore I am entitled to. This is the other confusion that I see as becoming more and more widespread under the current administration of Georgia and the Senate. This assumption that I want and I need mean the same thing. I have heard it over and over and over. I need a new cell phone. Really? You mean your heart will stop, or your oxygen supply will be cut off, or your ability to process food will end if you don't get this thing? And yet, over and over and over again, we allow our children to believe and internalize this concept simply because we don't recognize that words mean things. When you say, I need a new car, probably what you are really saying is, I want a new car. Unless yours is lying on the road dead and is impossible to fix, you probably don't need one. I need a new computer. Because yours died and it's not possible to fix it, then you do need one. As a good that you are used to having. But do you have a right to a computer? Of course you don't. Any more than you have a right to a diamond necklace, a mink coat, and a Rolls Royce with chauffeur. These are goods. Yes, they're becoming needs in many ways for those of us who work in the public arena and work for government-funded agencies like the public schools, because more and more we're relying on technology to get us through every single day. Whether it's in our job or whether it's in our entertainment or even in our education. And I am not anti-tech. And in certain circumstances, wanting a new computer does translate to needing one if it's essential for you to make a living, feed yourself and your family, and pay your bills. But we also have a tendency to assume that every want is a need. I want a new television because my old one doesn't have a screen that covers an entire wall. I want the latest version of whatever game is being played on your DS or your Wii system or whatever. And I want translates to I need. I want to be able to use my cell phone in the middle of a class. And that translates to, I need to text my best friend and tell her the latest rumor I heard about her, even though I'm supposed to be listening to a lecture on the difference between communism and capitalism.
We both have the same training when it came to our parents teaching us the difference between a necessity and a luxury.
Yes, ma'am. When I was a little girl, we had a limit on the number of things that could go on our Christmas list. Even at the time,
wow,
we still believed in Santa Claus. And that limit was very firm. And it was also understood that you might want the latest new whatever it is, but if the family exchequer couldn't give it to you without cutting back on food, clothing, or shelter, you were probably not going to get the I want. And yes, that simple concept of what comes in has to go back out and the going out can't exceed what comes in is Econ 101 that apparently most parents never learn, so how in the heck are they going to teach their children?
Right.
This is part of the reason we have this right to an education philosophy that says an education isn't knowledge that you have gained and can use the rest of your life. An education is a piece of paper that says you graduated from high school or you've got a BS in something or an BA in something else or a PhD or an MA or whatever. As if somehow or another, all you have to do to be successful in life is to tape that diploma or degree certificate or whatever on the front of your chest and walk in and everybody is going to bow down and worship you and give you the company. And I have never been able to understand this. I was a little odd. Well, I am still a little odd. But when I was young, I wanted to go to college. And you notice I said wanted, not needed.
Yeah.
My father believed that all of his daughters, and I have two younger sisters, should have the opportunity for a college education if they wanted one. Again, wanted. Because he did not have a degree himself and yet had progressed in his field to management position with nothing more than a high school diploma, a good brain that always continued to learn, and taking advantage of every opportunity given to him by the various companies he worked for to further his education, he could afford to send his girls to school. But he also understood that it had to be a want for each one of us, and it was not a need. And yet, our society is now telling children, coming from the mouth of the creature in the Oval Office, that everybody needs a college degree, otherwise they're going to live on the streets in poverty and be homeless for the rest of their lives. Or be, as John Kerry put it, forced to join the army. I think that was John Kerry's brilliant remark several years ago. But the understanding that higher education is not a need for every single living person in this nation. I've said before many, many times that I would infinitely prefer somebody who actually understands how to fix my washing machine to somebody who has a degree from somewhere or other and says, gee, isn't that a neat washing machine? Maybe if I kick it, it'll start. Yeah. Education is not just academic. And that's another mistake or misapprehension that's going around. To be educated in today's society either means technically knowledgeable in the field of computers and all the things that go along with them, or academically educated to college level. Well, being educated merely means that you have learned things that probably are going to be of use to you and others. That's the main reason why we learn things. That's what we do it for. That's the need that our education is fulfilling. The education itself is not the need. It's what we do with it. It's what we can achieve with it. That's the need. It's a means to meeting the need for advancing ourselves materially, spiritually, and intellectually, which is built into human beings. We are adaptable as a species, and that's why we're still here, and cockroaches haven't quite taken over yet, although they might. They can survive a nuclear blast unprotected, and you and I can't. But then again, I really don't want to live in a world as a slave to a cockroach either, so it's probably just as well.
You're too close to D.C., you already are.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate part. Yeah, you know, I'm within, quote-unquote, spitting distance, and it makes me very nervous at times. But my friend Rod in the chat room says that he took 2 years of electronics, but he didn't apply it to a job. He wanted to know about it. And that's what makes education work. We're telling our kids that an education is kind of like an annual checkup to make sure all your parts are running correctly. And that everybody needs one. Well, no, not everybody needs the kind of education that, oh, for example, that I have. I don't know of many people who need a master's degree in transpersonal psychology in order to be fruitful, happy, and still breathing. You know, if I didn't have it, I'd still be here. I did it because I wanted to know more about the field. And I gained a great deal. Not necessarily that I can commercially use or that it could be a promotion in my job or allow me to fix my car when it doesn't work. But I have knowledge of many, many different faith systems that helps me to understand a lot of different ways of looking at spirituality. And that's given me a great platform on which to stand to get to know and understand a little bit about many, many people who otherwise I might have had difficulty communicating with. So it was a value to me. It was a good for me personally. And that's why I did it. But we are telling our children that it's a right. And what they are believing is that that right to an education meant a right to succeed at whatever he or she wished to do. I've never been able quite to understand the leap of illogic that gets them there, although I've heard it from the White House often enough. Based on statistics, people with college degrees generally are paid more per annum than people without them. Because in many businesses, having a college degree is almost a requirement for a management position. It was for my husband when he was working for Best Products. He never finished his bachelor's degree. He was like maybe 10 credits shy of it. But then, of course, I don't quite understand what finishing a degree in philosophy and religious studies would have done to make him a better manager, but apparently Best thought it would. And that's another aspect. The idea that I'm going to get a degree in something, and that automatically guarantees that I'm going to be management material. I've met a lot of people with degrees in all sorts of very interesting things that are less than good managers. They are abysmal. A college degree does not necessarily give you management skills, ladies and gentlemen. Management skills don't only come from textbooks in a business course. Management skills come from understanding people. Yes, courses in psychology and business management can help you to put labels on certain personality types and understand different ways of dealing with them. But if you don't remember what you learned about them or apply it with common sense, you're still going to make a lousy manager. We all come with innate skills and abilities. We all come with difficulties and problems and areas in which we are either uninterested or unskilled and likely to remain that way. For me, one of those is driving the stick shift. And believe me, I've had about 6 people try to teach me, and the ones who didn't leap from the car screaming in fear managed to get me stopped long enough to get out, kiss the ground, and say, bye-bye, don't try this again. I'm fine. You know? It doesn't stop me from going where I want to go or doing what I want to do. I just drive a car with an automatic transmission. And if that makes me leave a horrible carbon footprint, fine and dandy. At least I'm not taking a jet to global warming conventions like Mr. Gore does. So the understanding of what a right and a need and a want and a good are is something that we have to teach our children not only by precept and by definition, but by example. When your kid comes home with a C in something, instead of screaming at him and telling him he isn't or screaming at the teacher and demanding that she increase the grade if he, you know, empties the wastebaskets and cleans the board every day for 3 weeks, find out what it is he isn't understanding. What is his part in getting that grade? Too many parents make the assumption that their child is one step short of Mother Teresa or Jesus Christ, that nothing in the world that that child could do anything except delight everyone who comes in contact with it. And this despite the fact that mom and dad have occasionally had to administer discipline because Mr. Perfect or Ms. Perfect has contravened a household rule. I have heard so many teachers who have done everything possible to bring to life the subjects that they teach their children, only to have parents complain because their kid didn't bother to do half of the assignments and got a less than perfect grade, that parents are complaining to the teacher that the teacher is being unfair. When did it happen, folks, that learning, being in school, was a one-way street? That all the effort had to be put forth from the front of the classroom by the teacher, and none was required on the student's part. I know that part of it started with the idea of applying the ADA to learning disabilities, as in, you know, the Americans with Disabilities Act. And I've mentioned this before, but it has a direct bearing. The ADA was originally conceived to permit people with physical handicaps to engage completely in the process of being a citizen, providing access to public facilities, governmental agencies, office buildings, courthouses, etc., for people who had physical disabilities that would not allow them to use the normal methods of ingress and egress, because they were perfectly capable of exercising their rights as a citizen, mentally, intellectually, emotionally, but their physical difficulties put up an artificial barrier between them and their participation in government by the people. It was a good law. It was well-intentioned. But like every other good law that is well-intentioned that comes about in this country, it got carried to absurd lengths. I was in favor in the late 1970s and early 1980s of seeing the Americans with Disabilities Act applied to children with learning disabilities, purely and simply because that would have meant that sensible accommodations for kids who were quite capable of learning and passing their courses could be made so that specific problems wouldn't hold the child's natural ability back artificially. But unfortunately, because as soon as you say that this learning disability is qualified under the Act, you've got 60 million lawyers swarming in on behalf of poor, deprived children who have some other sort of difficulty, and they want their slice of the pie, too. That's one of the difficulties, ladies and gentlemen, with laws. And, yes, I know I sound like a raving anarchist. I'm not. I'd love to be a rational anarchist, but I don't believe there are enough rational people out there to form a society with. So that one's out. But by their very nature, ladies and gentlemen, narrow one's rights, because they are always interpreted according to the wants of the person who is looking at the law. It is illegal in most states for human beings under the age of 21 or so to consume alcoholic beverages. These laws were put in place because we all know that alcohol, as well as being a depressant, removes inhibitions. And children do not need to have their any inhibitions removed because most of them don't have any there in the first place. So we certainly do not want them raging around drunk and hurting themselves or others. But once we have a law, then we have people who are going to attempt to use that law to get what they want, either by making an exception for certain things, such as a sip of communion wine in your church, or at home having wine with your with the Seder, the Friday evening pre-Sabbath meal, celebrating with champagne at your mother's 47th wedding, whatever. The minute we say something is illegal, we're always going to have people who just for the hell of it are going to go ahead and do it anyway to prove they can. Because we are not very good at self-regulation. But the other side of that coin is that without laws, without a codex, an understanding of what is expected of members of a society when they interact with one another, we would live in anarchy. And anarchy is the strong rule, the weak submit. And I don't know of anybody who would willingly enter into that particular type of society unless they're pretty doggone sure they're the strong. And not any of us is guaranteed that they're going to be the strongest creature on the planet. You know, not unless you're coming back as T-Rex with a human brain, and even then you're going to have a problem doing push-ups. So when we apply laws, ladies and gentlemen, to the function of the human mind and spirit and heart, we open the door to making a kind of artificial skeleton for each one of us. And that's what we've done when we applied the ADA to education. We have said that anything, any abnormality, anything that doesn't fall within the medical, intellectual, sociological, psychological, any kind of ological you want, boundaries of the norm, is a disability. And as such, requires accommodations so that the person with this disability can lead a quote-unquote normal life. which of course is a fiction too, because if you've got a disability, you're not going to need a normal life, no matter how many laws we pass to guarantee it. If I have no legs, I am not going to be able to walk normally, ever, in spite of the laws that say I have to have a normal life. The same thing with the idea that a learning disability, a behavioral disability, an emotional disability, a reproductive disability, any kind of disability you can think of, must be accommodated in the way that benefits the person who has this disability, no matter how much that might disrupt everybody else around them who is without specific disabilities. It's not possible to do this. And yet we have a law that says it is. Because everybody has the right, here we go again, to a free, appropriate public education. And appropriate means comfortable for them. Appropriate is another tricky little word. What's appropriate when I was growing up meant what was socially acceptable under specific social conditions. It was appropriate to burp, okay, at the dinner table, so long as you excused yourself. It was appropriate to ask permission to use the restroom in someone else's home. It was not appropriate to walk into somebody else's house, pick up somebody else's things, and walk out the door with them as if they were yours. Appropriate meant that something was socially acceptable, socially correct. Now, appropriate doesn't mean that. Appropriate means comfortable for whoever it is we're applying the word appropriate to. So an appropriate education for a child with a behavioral disability that does not allow him to interact positively with other children is to make sure that the other children are aware that they shouldn't talk to him, sit near him, mention him, look at him, breathe in his direction, or exhibit any discomfort when he picks something up and throws it at the teacher. Now, that, ladies and gentlemen, is the current definition of appropriate accommodations in public school. And believe me, if anybody did do anything to stop little Mr. Appropriate from throwing something at the teacher, little Mr. Appropriate's parents would have their parents in court suing the kid who did try to stop him from, you know, taking the teacher's head off with a paperweight for assault or interference with his free appropriate public education. And don't think it hasn't happened, because I'm sure it has. Obviously, our educational system needs to be overhauled. And the first step in that overhaul is getting rid of the assumption that education is a right. Because when people believe they have a right to something, they expect that whatever it is to be exactly what they want 100% of the time. A right means it should be there all the time, no matter what. And this inability to understand the difference between a right and a good, and the difference between a want and a need, is what has gone a great way to making our once world-famous educational system drop to near the bottom of developed countries. My friend Kyra says that education is a privilege and not a right, and she is correct. Any child in a third world country who is not the son or daughter of a dictator or the bodyguard of a dictator would probably give up just about everything they had, which isn't much, to have the opportunity that any child in this nation does. to walk into a clean, neat, positive environment in which knowledge is given freely. And all that is asked of you is your attention and your willingness to absorb it. But because we are incredibly wealthy, ladies and gentlemen, and we are, our children are very spoiled, just as we are. We are incredibly comfortable. Most of our wants are readily available to us. I have a friend who served in Vietnam. And he once told my husband and me when we were sitting around talking about this, that, and the other, that one of the things that made him grateful was to walk into a supermarket and know that he could purchase anything and everything for which he had the money. Because he vividly remembered having to put guards on garbage trucks so that the people wouldn't steal the refuse on its way to the dump. All those people out there who are whining and complaining about their rights being violated should spend a little bit of time in a country where the only right you have is to do what you're told. I remember another story that I heard many years ago. A group of young men, originally from Jamaica, were caught and imprisoned for petty crimes, and it was discovered that they were in the country illegally. And rather than putting them in jail and keeping them there, they were to be deported back to their own country of origin, Jamaica. To a man, they begged and pleaded to go to prison rather than be sent back home. Because jail in this country was a summer resort in comparison to just general life in poverty in Jamaica. Well, Ms. Linda is on in the chat room and on the computer again, so she's not online with us. But if anybody else wants to call in and express your feelings about whether or not education is a right, the number to call for guests is 646-378-0321. Again, that number to call if you want to join in the discussion and give us your opinions is 646-378-0321. The understanding of the difference between a right and a good and a want and a need is something that our founders had. They had lived under rulers who had told them that whatever it was they believed they had a right to, they actually didn't. That all rights came from the ruler. And thus the ruler could, for any reason or no reason, take them away at a whim. They understood what it was like to have people thousands of miles away dictate to them how they could and could not live, where they could and could not worship, what form their worship must or must not take. That unless they owned property, they had no voice in the way they were governed. And even if they did own property and had been guaranteed the rights of a British citizen, the crown could take that away for the good of the English Navy or the English government. By dismantling the legislative bodies of each colony, placing royal governors over the citizens of a colony, and refusing to remove them even if they were corrupt, inept, or downright wicked. Our founding fathers quite clearly understood the difference between a right and a good. Benjamin Franklin was a great advocate of education, public education, for everybody, because he was a self-educated man. He didn't come from money. He was an orphan, for heaven's sake. He educated himself. Somebody taught him how to read, and once that happened, couldn't hold him back. My friend Bill says the people who are always worrying about the plight of the lesser endowed or the poor or whatever very rarely personally contribute. The ones who are busily talking about how we all have to pay our fair share and help the unfortunate generally are the ones who give the least to charity, and the ones who aren't constantly bleeding at other people to do it quietly and without public recognition and with no desire for publicity give the most. I don't know if any of you are old enough to remember a book and a subsequent movie called Magnificent Obsession. The theme of the book, or the storyline, was a doctor who had pretty much been a playboy, was responsible for major physical damage to someone. And the guilt that he felt nearly destroyed him until a wiser, older friend told him that the best way to try to, if not assuage the guilt, but to learn to live with it, was to give of himself and of his material wealth anonymously to those who needed it. And the key was anonymously. And his advice to his young friend was once he did this, once he began to give for the sake of happiness of others, totally secretly and with no recognition, he would become obsessed with giving good rather than his own guilt. And it would become a magnificent obsession. In a way, that's the function, that's the need that being educated fills, ladies and gentlemen. Because when we exercise our minds, open them to knowledge and skills and talents, we also exercise our hearts. We began to see that our comfortable little world is much wider than we thought, and not everyone is as secure, as comfortable, as happy, as incredibly wealthy as we are. Instead of feeling that we are entitled to everything that we want, whenever we want it, and if we aren't getting it, then it's somebody else's fault, they're deliberately preventing us from having it, which is the current philosophy, we begin to see how lucky we are when we begin to learn about how unluck can be in other times and other places. Without access to learning, yes, your rights are being violated. And that's the right that education is supposed to be. Access, opportunity, the chance to learn. My friend Rod says, how do you develop self-esteem in people along with pride and achievement? And the only way you can do it is to make them get their own. And that's exactly correct. I cannot give anybody self-esteem. All the praise and stars and stickers and rewards and candies and hugs and gee, I love you, everybody love you, is not going to do one cotton picking thing for anybody's self-esteem if it isn't based in actual, real fact. Nobody can give me self-esteem. I have to, in effect, earn it. I have to do what I believe to be right, face the challenges that come to me, have enough courage to keep going, even if I'm scared to death, try to make sure that I deal with whatever is sent my way in the most positive way I can, without inflicting my troubles on others. I will earn my own self-esteem by meeting challenges and standing up to them, putting forth everything I am and everything I have to keep going. I value help along the way. We all do. Everybody needs a boost every once in a while. But that boost should not be the normal, expected, constant, every moment of your life right that our children are being brainwashed to believe that it is. Your right to an education is non-existence. Your right to the opportunity to learn is alive and well. And every single child has that right to try, to give it a shot, to have a chance to learn. But in spite of the fact that all teachers are obviously angels in disguise, created perfect, programmed to be able to put brains in children's heads, whether they come equipped with them or not, if your child doesn't take advantage of the opportunity, then it's obviously the fault of those evil, nasty teachers who are only there to collect a salary. And that's the other side of the right to an education coin. The assumption, again, that someone else is going to be able to provide for you a good without your having to exchange any form of effort or value in order to receive it. And this is the professional victim mentality. I am entitled to an A because I didn't throw a spitball at Susie or trip John or steal somebody's cell phone. I should get an A because I did really well on my SOL last year, state standards of learning tests. Well, your state standards of learning tests show me that you are capable of getting an A, but that I should give it to you without you having to do anything? No, that's not the case. Or my child should get an A because she's a cheerleader and involved in community service projects and is always in the youth group at church and helping out in the soup kitchen. Well, that's wonderful and that's admirable, but if she can't add 7 plus 5 and get 12 twice in a row, then she doesn't deserve an A in mathematics. The idea that community service is a substitute for accumulating knowledge of a specific academic discipline is absurd. And yet I have had teachers tell me about parents who expected the teacher to raise a C to an A because dear little Susie did all these wonderful community service things. Fine, give her a certificate as being a great citizen, along with her C in math. This ridiculous confusion in our nation, ladies and gentlemen, probably has Franklin and Jefferson and Adams and Wythe and Hancock and Richard Henry Lee and Roger Sherman and all the rest of the signers of the Declaration of Independence being underground whirling dervishes in their crypts, mausoleums, and graves right now. The idea that Americans, the citizens of the nation that they crafted, are running around or standing there with their mouths open, waiting for government to give them everything they want whenever they want it. It's a wonder we aren't hearing earthquakes all over the country, the eastern half of it, where these men are buried. Maybe that's what caused the earthquake we had in Virginia a couple of years ago. Tom Jefferson rolling over in his grave. The other confusion with wants, needs, rights, opportunities, all of those words that don't mean anything anymore except what politicians tell you they mean. Because we are telling our children that merely being alive gives them the right to have everything that they could conceivably wish for, we are denying the understanding of history that an education should give them. The rights that they enjoy now, the privileges they enjoy now, the comfort, the wealth, the innovation, the incredible burgeoning technology would not be here without the sacrifices of millions of people who have gone before us, and not just in this nation, but in world history. The trials and failures and successes and rise and fall of empires and societies, the wealth of knowledge of those who came before us is inaccessible to today's students because they are firmly convinced that somebody else should be able to read for them, since it was too hard for them to learn. This so-called right to an education phrase alone has done so much appreciable harm to the function of our public school system. It's sad. It saddens and it sickens me. My mother was born in 1925. Her father died when she was 10 and her sister was 15. He left no life insurance of any kind. He left two daughters and a widow with no money and no home. My grandmother worked probably about 60 hours a week at two or more jobs to put food on the table and pay tuition for both of her daughters to finish 12 years of Catholic school. My mother understood what a good was because she saw her mother work her delicate little derriere off so that that good would be available for her daughters. My father was born in 1925 also, and he was incredibly lucky because his father was employed all throughout the Depression. They weren't rich, but there was always food on the table. There were clothes to wear and a roof over their heads. And there was public school. And my dad wanted to go to college so badly he could taste it. He even got a scholarship his senior year in music. But his father wouldn't permit him to take it because his father never even graduated from high school and believed that the only way for a man to make a living was to go to work as soon as possible. Not that my dad hadn't already gone to work. He was a pinboy in a bowling alley at the age of 14 and driving a floral delivery truck when he was 15. They were a little lax on licensing rules for automobiles in those days. So my dad took advantage of every educational opportunity that came his way. Correspondence school courses paid for by the companies he worked for. Listening to the engineers with whom he worked when he started out as a draftsman. Learning from them. Taking courses in management skills and rising in his profession from draftsman to engineer. Assistant project engineer, as a matter of fact. He understood what a good was. And he didn't spend his time whining about the fact that somebody should have paid for him to go to college. That he deserved it. That he was entitled to it. He knew better. My mother did not work outside the home after she became pregnant with me. But anybody who thinks that being a mother and a homemaker and a wife is an easy job needs their head examined. It is one of the most difficult jobs in the world. One that I never wanted to take on, and I'm quite honest about it. I don't have that much altruism in me to devote my life to caring for others in that way. I admire and respect and love people who choose to be full-time parents. I didn't want that. For me, it was not a good. And bless my mother, she understood. She told all of us girls that being a mother was the best thing that ever happened to her in her life, and she wouldn't trade it for anything. But that if that wasn't the path we wanted to follow, we should follow whatever path and seek whatever goal our own hearts taught us to. She understood what a good was. She knew that I wanted college. I wanted it. I craved it. So she and my father made sure that I got to go. And years after I graduated, when I offered to repay my father and my mother for what they'd spent on my education, my dad was insulted. Yeah, he was insulted. He said to me, "That's what a father's supposed to do. And I didn't do it so you could pay me back." He understood what a good was. Even though I kind of disappointed him when I changed my major from art to Spanish. But he got over it. One of the finest compliments I ever got from him was that I was fairly logical for a woman. And he meant it as a compliment, so I took it that way. But my parents were part of the greatest generation, who, like the founders, understood what a good was because they lived through a time when evil was rampant and about to destroy the good for everyone. They were educated, ladies and gentlemen, both of them, all the way through high school. They both graduated from high school. They both were avid readers. They were lifelong learners, and they taught their children to be the same because they understood that there was no such thing as a right to an education. There was only the opportunity to educate oneself. Had I been a parent, I would have done my best to emulate that understanding for my own children. As it is, I do my best to emulate that for the children with whom I work. To let them know, as often as I can, that the only thing that they can keep forever and that no one can ever steal from them is what they put in their minds and in their hearts. To them, to put it there. Nobody can learn for them. Nobody can give them anything they are unwilling to take. And a right to an education doesn't exist. A right to the opportunity to become educated does. This was the vision that people like Franklin and many of the other founding fathers had. They wanted to make sure that we had an educated electorate because they knew that if a man cannot rule himself as an individual, men cannot rule themselves as a nation. And that education and the acquiring of an education requires the self-discipline and effort that can make a person into a concerned and viable citizen of a nation in which the people rule. They wanted that opportunity for everyone, even women, which was odd, because in those days, women were expected to be wives and mothers, and that was their role. They were trained from birth to be wives and mothers. That was their function. God made them to be wives and mothers, and we can't go against God's wishes. So therefore, education for women was considered to be ridiculous if it went beyond learning how to handle money, keep the household accounts, and figure out how to read a recipe. And of course, read the Bible so you could instruct your own children. But higher education for women, ridiculous. What do women need to know about stuff like that? We men will take care of them. That's changed. And it's a good thing that it has. But like all change, it comes with a downside. Education for everyone is a great rallying cry. And I sincerely believe in its viability. Everyone should have the chance to become educated. Where I disagree with the education for everyone mantra is the interpretation placed on it by those who would use it as a means of controlling the thoughts and the hearts of free men and women. The idea that educating someone means programming them to take their place and be assimilated into the Borg collective repulses me. And unfortunately, the right to education opens the door to that kind of control grab. Because the minute you tell somebody he has a right to something or other, and that you're the one who gave him that right, he becomes dependent upon you and subject to your whims when he attempts to exercise this so-called right. We've got to stop focusing on our right to things, okay? We don't have a right to things, ladies and gentlemen. There is no cosmic law or divine precept that says, I have a right to be queen of the universe. I have a right to have everybody do my bidding. It's not there. Doesn't exist. And yet with our focus on, I have a right to this, that, and the other, or I'm entitled to this, that, and the other, we're opening the door to more and more and more empty promises covering the control issue that socialism and its ilk are all about. My friend Kyra says, I've dashed her hopes of being queen. I'm sorry, Kyra, but when I'm empress, you can be my handmaiden. How about that? And, of course, you know when that's going to happen. I won't say once in a blue moon because we actually do have them. It's try never. I think we spend a lot of time, ladies and gentlemen, talking about our rights. We do, all of us. And that's not a bad thing at all. My friend Kyra says it's okay. She'll be my handmaiden. We need to start focusing on exactly what the difference is between a right and a good or an opportunity. We do have rights. By having been born human, we have the right to seek the divine in whatever way speaks to us. We have the right to speak our minds about issues and ideas, either for or against. We have the right to govern ourselves and choose those who will make laws for the betterment of the society in which we live. We have the right to try to succeed. We do not have the right or a right to success. We have the right to protect ourselves and defend our own lives. We have the right and security in that property. We have the right to face accusers in an open forum and demand that any evidence against us be presented so all can see it. And we have the right to present evidence of our own before the people in any legal dispute. These really are rights, ladies and gentlemen. And they don't come from government. Government's job is to protect them, not issue them. But because we have allowed more and more and more government in the way that we educate our children, we have taken their right to the opportunity for knowledge and convince them knowledge is something that is automatically placed in your head merely by following government rules in a classroom for 12 years. And that merely existing requires everyone else on the planet to accommodate to whatever your difficulties are. And that the education you get when everybody does that is going to somehow or other give you expertise or value in the working world. When we focus on, I have a right to, without understanding what a right is, we deliberately dumb ourselves down and become easy meat for the rapacious power grabbers in government. We become easily manipulated and even more easily lied to. Because we'll have all sorts of interesting new laws about how I have a right to thus and so, and he has a right to this, and everybody else has a right to something else. And pretty soon, everybody will have all sorts of rights and we'll all start killing each other over them. My friend Kira says they also require the definition between the differences between need and desire. What's a want and what's a need? And that is a very, very difficult to learn and understand. We all do it, ladies and gentlemen. We all think our material wants are our material needs. And we pass that along unconsciously and not truly with malice aforethought to our children. When we allow ourselves to be manipulated into, okay, you can have a new cell phone so nobody laughs at you because you're using an old one. Because this is another happy little right that our kids are told they have, to be accepted by and acclaimed by, admired by their peers. That somehow or other, if everybody doesn't love you, they are violating your rights to the affection of the universe. It's never stated quite that blatantly. But that's part of our quote-unquote right to education philosophy in public schools. All of the lovely little kumbaya moments of the anti-bullying lectures. And you should reach out to the kid who doesn't have any friends and become his or her friend, whether you like him or not, whether he's at all interesting or attractive or has any interests in common with yours, you've got to step up there and be his friend because he doesn't have any. And everybody has a right to have friends. No, they don't. Confusion between rights and goods, ladies and gentlemen, that undermines the freedoms that we all value so highly. That old saying about my rights begin and end where your rights begin and end. How far does my right to protect myself from a perceived threat go? Can I shoot you just because I've heard a rumor that you are thinking about robbing my house? No, I can't. My friend Kira says, since when do we have the right to have friends? I grew up as a loner and I'm okay now as a mature adult. And so did I, Kira. Friendship isn't a right either. Neither is love. Or compassion, or kindness, or even justice, or mercy. They aren't rights, they are goods. The right to self-esteem, for heaven's sake, is probably going to be written into the next interpretation of the ADA. I don't have any right to self-esteem. It's like saying I have a right to health. No, I don't. I have a right to doing as much as I can to promote my own health, yes. But a right to health? No. I may be genetically predisposed to something like breast cancer or Alzheimer's. I certainly have absolutely no right to alter time, space, and infinity and go back and change my genetic code. And as Kira says, self-esteem has nothing to do with disability, and she's quite right, it doesn't. Self-esteem is something that someone achieves by meeting and conquering obstacles and challenges in their own life. You can't inject it. You can't operate and put it in place of an organ. You can't feed it with your baby food or bottles or sodas or anything else. You can't create it with material goods. You can't give it to someone with unearned praise. Self-esteem has to come within the self. That's why it's called self-esteem. Esteem means the admiration of others. Esteem doesn't translate to self-esteem. Poor Kira, I've dashed her hopes again. We don't get to, I don't have a time machine to go back and change our genetic code. But it comes back, ladies and gentlemen, to the understanding that your rights are not the same things as your wants, your needs, your desires, or your opportunities. As long as we keep telling ourselves that we have a right to whatever it is we happen to want at any given time, we are deluding ourselves and making ourselves, like I said, easy meat. For those who are clever enough and ruthless enough to use our stupidity to further their own power. And it's stupidity. Not ignorance, downright stupidity. To start paying attention to the difference between a want and a need and a right and an opportunity. And we have to show our children that we understand the differences and help them to understand them as well. We are never, ever, ever in a million, gazillion, quadrillion, how Googleplex number of years going to have all human beings exactly alike in their personality, character, skill set, abilities, and desires. It is not going to happen. We are individuals, ladies and gentlemen. And no matter how much we beg and plead and whine and demand our rights, government cannot change the fact that some of us are going to make mistakes. Some of us are going to do bad things simply because we think it's fun. Some of us get pleasure from making other people suffer. Some of us are kind and compassionate because it makes us feel good to help people. Some of us enjoy learning, and some of us are bored silly by it. I know you're kidding, Kira, and I enjoy it, so keep it up. The difficulties that I see ahead of us as a nation, ladies and gentlemen, are not insurmountable. If I felt they were, I would just crawl off into a corner, with my nice, neat, polished coffin, lie down in it, and wait to die. Well, I'm not doing that. Because I believe in the human spirit and its connection to that which is greater than all of us and of which we all are a part. And I believe that that combination of things will bring us through the various crises that we face. Perhaps not as comfortably or as safely or as wealthily as we would like it to. All civilizations rise and fall. And it's quite logical that ours would do the same. But every civilization that has existed, that has risen and then fallen, has provided fertile ground for new civilizations to rise in their turn. And we've gotten a little bit better every time. Whether it's our ability to make better tools, to make tools that make better tools, that continue to make better tools, or our spirit of inquiry and creativity and excitement and curiosity, or the divine hand over us, I don't know. I'm not wise enough to tell. But I do know that we don't have the right, a future that will be what we design it to be. We have the opportunity to make it. And it comes right down to that. My friend Linda says this one will resemble the Assyrian walls. The Assyrian came down like a wolf on the fold. And she isn't looking forward to it, and neither am I. But I'm not the only human being on the planet, thank fortune. And I am not powerful enough to control every other human being I share this earth with. I wouldn't even put in a resume for that job, even if there was an opening for it. I've never been interested in power over anything except myself. But I do believe that we will live long and prosper, to quote Mr. Spock, simply because the human spirit comes from God and is thus indomitable. And that it is our job as individual humans to always choose to do what is right instead of what is easy. If you can teach your children, ladies and gentlemen, that at home, I will do my very best to embody and reinforce it at school. The opportunity to educate oneself belongs to all of us. Parents, students, teachers, politicians, world leaders, academicians, athletes, dancers, actors, car salesmen, refrigerator repairmen. Every single one of us has the capacity to be a lifelong learner. But as individuals, we have to decide whether we need to or whether we want to, or both. Thank you all, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us tonight. I hope you'll join us here on Blog Talk Radio next Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time for another episode of Patriot Education. And when you do, feel free to call in and express your opinion. Because even though I have no problem expressing mine, I'm certainly not unkind enough to tell everybody else they can't give theirs. For my friends Bill and Kyra and Linda and Yo and Nick who visit with us on the chat room and Rod, thanks guys for your support and your presence. I send you all my love and big hugs because you are, all of you, a part of my family. And may God bless you all for what you do and who you are. Join us on Blog Talk Radio for some of our other shows. Right from the Left Coast on Wednesday, Constitution Hour on Monday, Hooten Hour on Tuesday. Visit our website. Talk with us. Write to us. Message us. Go out and talk to people, ladies and gentlemen, because everybody you meet has something to teach you. And you can and should be a lifelong learner, because that's what you were made to do. And what you learn can be shared with others. We are incredibly wealthy as a civilization, ladies and gentlemen, not just in material goods. We have the wealth of technology, the wealth of freedom, and the wealth that comes with being a human being and a child of God. Use that wealth wisely. Become magnificently obsessed with doing good anonymously, folks. If you can, one small act of kindness definitely, definitely resonates and it builds. Have a wonderful evening, everybody. And I will see you right here on Blog Talk Radio next Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time for Patriot Education. Good night to all my friends in the Patriot family and all of you out there listening. And as always, all my love to my greatest fan. Good night, folks, and God bless.